Hello and welcome to We're Watching What? Or in the case of today, We're Interviewing Who? I'm your host Dana, or the DHKs have known, and my guest today is writer-director Laura Chin. She has a new feature film out called Suncoast, which stars Laura Linney, Nico Parker, and Woody Harrelson, and it's a semi-autobiographical story about this young woman whose brother has brain cancer and so goes to the same hospice that Terri Schiavo is at, so kind of a heavy subject, but there's also just the story of a teenage girl wanting to fit in and make friends. You technically don't have to have seen the film for this discussion to make sense, but it's certainly much more helpful. And now, without further ado, here's We're Interviewing Who? I'm going to start with, and I'm going to ease into this, logistically, what would you say the most challenging scene was?
Oh gosh, logistically. You know what's funny is that the most challenging scene was this driving scene where Woody's teaching Nico how to drive. And it shouldn't have been, but it just, the day got away from us and the sun was setting and we're like up against the light. And Nico doesn't have a driver's license in real life, so she can't drive. You know, she lives in London, so they just, you know, they have amazing public transportation over there. So it was just like them on the back of a process trailer and me through a walkie-talkie, and they can't hear me. And so it was just like, do whatever, you know? And so they're just improvising. They're just improvising and playing. And at the end of the day, I was like, God, I hope this will cut together. I don't know what this is going to be like, because it was also like, we're losing light, you know, that kind of energy. And then our editor assembled it like overnight and sent it to me. And I was like, well, this is a delight. but I remember laying awake going like, we're going to have to reshoot this because I don't know how this is going to come together. And then our editor's a genius. So it worked out great.
Yeah, I guess under a special skill, you did not require a driving license when you were doing casting. But she had some other things going for her, I guess, that, you know, might have made her.
She definitely had enough talents. We didn't need that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Harder question probably, but emotionally, what was the most challenging scene for you to get right?
To get right, you know, these actors were so good. It really wasn't, it always felt like, it's funny, that scene stands out because it was like technical. It was like, when the sun's setting, you don't have time to get all the coverage we want, right? But emotionally, I left there every day feeling like blown away by them, you know, blown away by their abilities. And our first AD was amazing. Cedric Rivera, he was amazing. He scheduled it in a way where all of the emotional stuff was at the end, right? Mm-hmm. So it was like, we spent the first 33 days just like partying, you know, like teenage parties and fun and, you know, all this like Christine's climbing in the ceiling and like everything was very light. And as everybody got closer and closer to each other and those final days, that's when all the emotional stuff was. And we really just gave the actors a lot of space. We were on Steadicam and we're like, just do what you feel like doing. If you want to get up and hug each other, hug each other. If not, don't, you know, like just kind of follow the emotions of this moment and see where it brings you. So we really loosely rehearsed it and they really just were able to like be very present in the moment. And I always left at the end of the day in awe of what they were capable of.
What would you say the biggest change was from the first version of the story percolating in your brain to the one we see on screen?
You know, it's funny. I recently found an email that I sent my writing, like I have a mentor for writing, a man who's been like sort of a guidance figure for me and for over the past, oh my God, so many years. But I found an email that I sent him in 2018 where I was like, I want to write this movie. And I don't exactly know what it is. And I sent him all these beats that have been floating around in my head. And I went back and read it and I was like, oh my God, that's the whole movie. Like all the beats that ended up like floating around in my head that went in this random email ended up kind of on screen. That was sort of surprising. It was almost surprising to me how much didn't change from the first kind of inspiration that came to where the movie ended up. Whereas I thought it must have changed so much, but I don't know. Art is weird that way where you're like, wow, my subconscious kind of understood this more than I did even while I was doing it, you know?
Yeah, it was just about like the ironing out the details versus like breaking the story. Yeah. I know you've explored Florida a lot in your work, one would say. What is the top Florida myth you would dispel if you could?
Oh, gosh. I mean, Florida's great. I think it's interesting. I always thought that people viewed Florida as like Florida man, Florida woman, you know, like, and I would say like, let's dispel that myth, right? Because there is really beautiful parts of Florida. Florida's a vacation mecca. Like there's a beautiful state. But then when people watched Florida Girls, they were like, oh, I always thought Florida was like pristine vacation wealth. And then I saw Florida Girls and I was like, oh. So I think everyone has a different view of Florida. I guess I would say just go there and experience it, because I think whatever it is on TV, whether it's Florida Girls portraying the more like, you know, lower class side of Florida, or it's Miami Vice with this like sleek, sexy Miami thing. Like, just go there and figure it out for yourself, because it's kind of everything, you know, it's all the things.
What would you say the most accurate Florida trope is, though, if there is one?
Oh, God. I don't know. I love Florida so much because it is so eclectic. And so it really is hard for me to like pin it down and point a finger and be like, this is Florida, you know, sure. Because it's always surprising me. I was just reading more about Sarasota, which is like turning into this, like, you know, there's like a film festival there and it's becoming very bougie. And like, I don't know. I just feel like you could say Florida is like a red state and all these things, but then you could look deeper into any one city and be like, oh, but there's all this like art and liberal thriving scene of, I don't know, creativity and culture. So I don't know. I think it's everything.
Okay. if you could pick one song that embodies the 2000s to you, what would it be and why?
Oh, God.
Not for like other people, just your own version of the 2000s. I know we got like one, you know, a hit of it in this, but...
I know, there's so many amazing 2000 songs in this movie. So my mind only goes to this movie. But let me think if I can think of a 2000 song that's not in this movie that I... But my mind goes to Time After Time, but that might have been 90s. Remember that song?
Yes.
Is that late 90s?
I think that's 80s. It's 1983.
Oh my God. The reason why I flashed on it is because
it's timeless. It's a perfect song.
And in 2000, in the year 2000, my best friend and I were going to perform that for our school's talent show. And so for some reason, when I hear 2000s, I'm like, that's the song of the 2000s. Is that 80s? Jesus.
Yeah. it's early 80s too, but you know, it embodies it for you. So it's the soundtrack of your 2000s.
It's the soundtrack of my 2000s. I feel like though, Don't You Wish Your Girlfriend Was
Hot.
Oh,
I mean, sure.
That, I feel like that song was an epic early aughts song, but also I think for in this movie, like that's the song that stands out to me so much. Cause I love that scene so much. So I'll say Don't You.
Okay. I'm going to get a song stuck in your head possibly for me. Hey Ya.
Oh, what a fantastic
Couldn't
one.
Go anywhere yeah. without hearing that.
No. And you wouldn't want to.
We'll still dance to it. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I will shake it like a Polaroid picture. Would you have described yourself as a party kid in school?
Oh, yeah. Majorly. Huge. Massive. Massive partier. I started partying when I was like 12 or something. So I had a fake ID when I was like 13. I was, yeah, big time partier. I was very different than Doris. I remember like Nikos going through my photo albums from when she was, you know, when we were in pre-production, and yeah. She's looking at photos and she's like, wait a second, you weren't like Doris at all. And I'm like, no, I don't claim to be. This is semi-autobiographical.
Sure,
but yeah,
yeah.
I was a partier, yeah.
What do you admire most about Doris?
Oh my God, I think Doris is such a better person than I was when I was that age. I mean, I think, you know, I think the way that she sort of, she's a better like, she's a better daughter. Like, she takes care of this kid in a way that my mother was always like, you need to take care of your brother. And I was like, no, I'm going out to party. So I feel like Doris is just like an all around better person. But what do I admire most? I think it's that. I think it's like the, you know, although I think in this movie, she's emotionally detached and not fully processing the loss of her brother, I think she's still caring for him in a way that is very admirable.
Yeah, absolutely. May not be obvious. I'm a mixed kid of different mixes than you are, but I am curious, what is the first time, if ever, you felt represented on screen?
Oh, what a good question. Oh my God. I remember growing up, there was not a lot of mixed people on television. I think, was it Halle Berry was the first one? I think Halle Berry was the first like actual mixed person where they talked about the fact that she was mixed, and I think Halle Berry. Yeah.
She that mixed.
Was the, yeah, yeah. Her mom's white. So she won the Academy Award, and she was like, I just want to thank my mom. And the camera goes over to her mom, and I was like,
wow, okay, yep. Mm.
Yeah.
She well, like Oscar-winning representation, excellent.
I know, and then Mariah Carey. I mean, she was huge. Mariah Carey was huge for me because she was so light-skinned, mixed, and so, and that was the person everybody always compared me to her growing up, you know, because people could, like, put me in that box. They're like, oh, you're like sure. Mariah Carey, got it, you know?
Yeah.
But so Mariah Carey was huge. I was like, okay, there are other people like me in the world, yeah.
I mean, two very talented people to choose from.
So. I mean, there are worse. It's yeah. not a bad group, yeah.
There are worse. Also, 2000s icons, so.
I know, exactly.
What is the first film you remember seeing in theaters that you were the impetus to going to see? So not like a friend or family dragged you along. You somehow, you know, got wind of it and were like, I must see this film.
Titanic.
Ooh.
Titanic. That's the one, right? That I think I was in like eighth grade, and I saw it like 6 times in theaters. And when you think about that, that's like 100 hours of
That's
movie
a lot of
watching.
hours. Yeah.
Such a
It's a lot
long
of Jim
movie.
Cameron.
Just kept going back and back and back. I was blown away by that movie.
Yeah, I got popcorn thrown at me at that movie because I laughed during one scene. Oops.
Oh, you can't laugh during Titanic. That's probably
No,
me.
I learned that the hard way.
That was me throwing popcorn at you.
It was a trauma response. Which, somebody may have said that there. Anyway, thank you so much for your time. I had a good hearty cry at this movie. It was very
Oh, thank
beautiful.
you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a good rest of your
Thank
day.
you. Thank you so much.
A huge thank you to Laura for her time. Suncoast is out streaming now on Hulu. That is it for this episode. If you liked it, we would love it if you could leave us a 5-star rating, a review, or even consider subscribing.